want to welcome my friend Josh and his wife Haley and Solomon and Asa, right? So Josh and I and Haley work at Motlow together, and Josh is the worship pastor at the First Baptist Church in Ardmore, right? And so he's also taken some seminary classes, and one of his assignments is to visit some other kinds of churches. So he said to me at school, I'm going to come see you. So I said, all right, I'll work up a sermon just for you. And so this is not a sermon just for Josh, but we've had fun. We've had a lot of good discussions, and we've talked about some of the differences and some of the things that are different about the church where he goes and here. And so I'm glad that you guys have come and welcome, and we'd certainly be glad to answer any questions you have. But mainly, we're just glad to have you join us for this evening. I've been invited to go back to my old alma mater, the congregation where I was a member in Cookeville, Tennessee, when I was finishing up engineering school at Tennessee Tech. And they're having a gospel meeting, and this is something that they've had in mind for quite a while. I've talked to Seth, you know, the McDonald's are members up there, and that's how I know Seth. In fact, when I met, some of you know Seth, who I'm talking about, but when I met Seth, he was about 11 or 12, and growing up there at that congregation, he's known a lot of guys who were members there as college kids who later became preachers. And so he had this idea, wouldn't it be kind of interesting to have a meeting of different speakers through the week and all of them be people who had at some point been a member there at that congregation, who kind of, because it's one of those college town churches, and so you have a lot of people coming in and out and going, moving through and then going on to somewhere else. And so they finally got around to putting that together, and they reached out to, I don't know, about six or seven of us and invited us to choose a night that we could be there and a topic that fit this theme to come back and speak to the congregation. And so I'll be going on Friday later this month up there to Cookeville to preach at that congregation. And the theme is kind of an interesting one. Well, I've never heard of a theme like this, but the theme was things I would tell my college self. So, of course, the idea is they've got college people there now who are where I was 20-something years ago. And, you know, what would you tell yourself at that age if you could tell yourself something? And so that's had me thinking back to 1996 and 1997 when I was there with Sarah and I were married in 97. And that was the time that I was there in Cookeville, 96 through 98. And thinking about, you know, what I would say. And so there was a list of topics to choose from. And the topics were like things I would tell myself or wisdom I would give my college self about handling peer pressure, handling alcohol, handling spiritual responsibilities, handling sexual temptation, handling anger, handling things like that. And one of them was handling money. And they sent this email out to like everybody who was invited, and I was a little late responding, so a lot of the topics were taken up already. I saw these emails. I'm reading through them. No. But one of the ones that was still available for me that I chose was handling money. So what would I tell myself in 1997 about money? And I've given that quite a bit of thought. And the first thing I would tell myself is to buy Amazon stock. Amazon, as it turns out, went public in 1997, and a share of their stock went for $18, and if I had bought, if I could have talked to me and Sarah then and go back and say, buy some Amazon stock, if you had bought $1,000 of Amazon stock in 1997 while we were there in Cookeville, it would be worth $1.3 million today if you'd bought that and held on to it. I don't think that's the kind of thing they're wanting me to say, though. You know, that's not the kind of wisdom like that Back to the Future sort of come back with the, here's all the bets to make and all the things to, that's not really the idea of it, but it does kind of tie into what I'm thinking about, and that is that it has to do with making decisions now that are preparing for the future, making decisions now that are going to pay off later. And it's easy to get caught up in the here and now, and I spent quite a bit of time around that age not thinking too far into the future, but just thinking about what was going on in the moment. And so, as I was thinking about some biblical wisdom about finances, Luke chapter 16 is a good place to go. In our recent series of speakers on Wednesday nights in the parables, two of them chose parables from Luke 15. You might have noticed that. We went through the parables of lost things, and we really some emphasis on the parable of the lost sons, and quite a bit of emphasis on that. And Luke 16 follows right on the heels of that. In fact, it almost sounds like it's just continuing on. It begins, and he also said to his disciples, and it just keeps on going. But it's not about this. These parables sort of shift gears, and it's not so much about lost things anymore as it is, it addresses those who had a love of money. And he's going to talk to them about that here in Luke chapter 16. And so that's really where I want to spend some time this evening as we consider some things that not only maybe I would tell my college self, but I need to hear now about having the right perspective on worldly goods and on money. So beginning there in verse 1, he also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be managed. So what shall I do, since my master has taken the management away from me? I'm enough to dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do, so that when I'm removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So summoning his master's debtors, one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, measures of oil. He said, take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, take your bill and write 80. And here's the surprising twist to this parable. The master commended the dishonest manager. That's Jesus, by Jesus' own description of him. For his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. Let's go ahead and read the next paragraph as well. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So let's stop there for a moment. Although it goes on to say the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard this and laughed about it. So I think he's addressing his disciples, but the Pharisees are also listening in. They're these people who are just, you know, lovers of money. And they think this is a funny story. Let's go back and consider the case of this dishonest manager. The setup is one that's similar to many parables, and that is there is a master who has possessions, and he's left them in the charge of someone else. There's a lot of parables that fit that description. There's parables where a vineyard is left to some other people to tend it and take care of it. There's, of course, the parables of the talents and the minas, where they are given some responsibility and told, here, go manage this. And in all of these parables have something in common. And that is that there is a wealthy owner whose stuff it is, and he leaves it temporarily in the care of someone else, and then that person is called to give an account. That's the theme of all those parables. And so what's that telling us? It's telling us that the possessions in question are things that belong to someone else, and the person who has some responsibility over them is really playing with house money, in a sense. They're dealing with someone else's things. They are managing someone else's land or someone else's vineyard, someone else's money, someone else's accounts. And in this case, this guy is the manager of this man's accounts, and he's been found not good at his job. In fact, charges have come against him. And notice what the charge is. The charge is that he was being wasteful in verse 1. That's the same word in the previous chapter of the prodigal when it says he wasted. He lived his life in wasteful living, prodigal. The whole word prodigal means wasteful. And so here this man has also been wasteful. And he was being wasteful with someone else's things. Now, it doesn't tell us how he wasted them, but it just means he wasn't being frugal. He wasn't being a good steward. He wasn't being a good manager. He was being wasteful. We could imagine maybe he wasted it on himself. I don't know how else he would have wasted it. He was in charge of some things, But instead of being like Joseph, who was faithful in his master's house, who, you know, Potiphar didn't have to worry about anything because Joseph did a good job, this guy is being wasteful with the stuff that had been given to him. And as a result, suddenly, it's going to be taken away. He's been given his notice. The master calls him in and says, you're fired in your account. But the interesting way that the plot of the parable sets up is that there's a little bit of a delay between when he's fired and when he's totally kicked out on the street, because now he has just a moment to run around really quickly and make some deals with people. And this is, I think, the key to the whole parable, is that he suddenly had an awareness. What is the awareness that he had? He went from feeling like, you just picture his life before and after this conversation with the boss. Before, he's probably, you know, living pretty comfortably. He's a manager, but he's enjoying his master's things, and he's not really worried about taking good care of it, and he's being wasteful with it, but he's probably pretty comfortable. And he wasn't thinking much about the future. He was just enjoying what he had. And now suddenly, after this one conversation with the boss, he's suddenly thinking to himself about the future. And he's thinking, now what am I going to do? And it's kind of almost humorous what his options. He says, well, I'm not strong enough to dig. I don't know how strong you have to be to dig. This guy was pretty puny, I guess. It reminds me of, you remember in Jacob and Esau, Jacob was an indoor guy. He liked tents and he kind of stayed inside and he liked to cook. And, you know, Esau's out there in the field and he's hunting and he's kind of rough and strong. And so this guy's more of like he may be a bookworm kind of a guy. He can't really picture himself out there doing some kind of backbreaking labor. So he says, I'm ashamed to beg. He really can't picture himself sitting out there with a little will work for food cardboard, you know, by the interstate. He doesn't like that idea. So he's kind of going through his options. He's thinking, what am I going to do? Because he suddenly realized that the things that he's been enjoying are not really his, and they're going to be taken away from him. And now where is he going to go? And so he says, I've got it. I know what I'll do. And he starts calling in these people, and he's settling accounts with them. And he's settling accounts with them that would be in their favor. And his thought process is, when my master finally kicks me out on the street, if I've made friends with some of these guys, maybe one of them will let me come to his house. And I won't be out there digging a ditch, and I won't be sitting on the side of the road with my cardboard sign, but I'll be able to go live in this guy's house. And the master is impressed with his shrewdness. He thinks to himself, he's done wisely because he's made use of the time that he had to prepare for what's coming next. And this is the point of the parable. In fact, Jesus tells us the point of it. He says in verse 9, in case we get confused, because this is kind of a difficult parable in some ways because the guy is kind of a scoundrel. But Jesus tells us the point of the parable in verse 9. I tell you, this is Jesus speaking, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth. And I think by that he just means worldly possessions. So that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwelling. So now let's think about who he's talking about. Where are the eternal dwellings? The only eternal dwelling I know about is heaven. So it's got to be that he's thinking about heaven. So Jesus is saying, use the things you've been entrusted with as a steward in a way that you will have an eternal dwelling waiting on you. Be smart, be shrewd, be wise with what's been entrusted to you so that when it fails, not if, when it fails. In other words, just like this guy, someday all this stuff's going to be taken away. And then we should be having the same thought process, which what he's having is, what am I going to do then? When all of this is gone, where will I be? And that's what he suddenly realized. When all this is gone, where am I going to go? And his thought was, I better plan now. I've got to hurry and plan because I want to have somewhere to go. And Jesus says, see, make the same connection. Use what's been entrusted to you now to prepare so that someone will welcome you into an eternal dwelling. Use what's been entrusted to you. And then he goes on to say, well, if you can't be trusted with things here, how will you be entrusted with true wealth? If you can't be a good steward, who's going to entrust you with real riches? So be smart. You also are a steward. I am a steward. Now, when we think back to this, I think back to 1997. and me being in college and growing up in general, I think it's interesting that this guy's crime is simply that he was wasteful. That doesn't sound all that awful. And truly, I wouldn't say, you know, if I was talking about lessons I would tell myself, I wouldn't say, go back to 97 and tell myself, quit stealing from people, because I didn't do that. You know, quit doing some horrible, awful thing. And I mean, in financially, I didn't do some of those things we might think of as pretty bad. But would I say I was wasteful with what I had been entrusted with? I think I was. I was pretty spoiled. I didn't probably appreciate that as much at the time. But I was pretty spoiled, and so I feel like, you know, I didn't appreciate a lot of things, and I was kind of wasteful with a lot of things. And I feel like maybe if I was called to give an account, I could see myself in this guy's shoes. Like, what are you doing with what God has blessed you with to use that in a way to be pleasing to Him and prepare for the future? What are you doing with what you've been given? You know, when Jesus says, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven, how are you using what you've been blessed with to help other people, to do good for others? Now, with that in mind, hold your place there and turn over to 1 Timothy 6, the passage that Larry read for us. I think this is Paul saying the exact same thing that Jesus is teaching in this parable. He's writing here in 1 Timothy 6 to people. And let's begin a little earlier in the context. Verse 6, 1 Timothy 6, 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world. We cannot take anything out of the world. That's the essence of the stewardship idea. And that is that this has been given to you temporarily. It wasn't yours when you got here. And when you leave, you're not taking it with you. You just have a little time to manage some stuff. So be careful how you think about it. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Verse 8. If we have food and clothing with these, we should be content. Don't get, you know, greedy. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. Now, skip down to verse 17. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. In other words, it can disappear at any time. But on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy, just like the wealthy man who, you know, gave this guy this stuff to manage. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of that which is truly life. I think this is exactly the same point Jesus is making. And that is, there are people who have been entrusted with a lot of stuff, and that's okay. He doesn't say it's sinful to have things, but he says, tell them, be careful. Don't set your hopes on the uncertainty of riches, because they can fail, they can go away, they can disappear, but set your hope and your trust on God and use what you have. Notice the instructions there. Verse 18, do good, be rich in good works, be generous, ready to share. If you do those things with what you've been entrusted with, then you are storing up treasure as a good foundation for the future. This is like investing in Amazon. Right? You're doing something now that's going to pay off down the road. Now, in terms of earthly finances, a financial advisor would say, let me tell you where to put your money, and it's going to pay off, and you get these kind of dividends, and it's going to build, and it's going to have compounding interest, and so forth and so on. And that's all fine. That's just part of being a good steward. But what we're really talking about is things that will pay off with an eternal, infinite payback. And that is really, instead about buying the right stock, it's about using what you've been given to glorify God by helping others, being kind, being compassionate, really thinking outside of yourself. And I don't know that I was all that good at that. I would say I wasn't all that good at that age, and maybe not all that good at that now. I think it's something I can always see that I can do better about. Instead of just being wasteful and being, you know, kind of like collecting stuff for myself, use what you've been given, be ready to share, do good, be generous, and thus storing up a foundation for the future. Now let's go back to Luke chapter 16 and look at one other passage that I think connects directly with this, one much more familiar, which is the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, starting down in verse 19. We're not going to go through this whole thing, but I just want to show how this connects. Verse 19, there was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen who feasted sumptuously every day. At his gate was laid a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. The poor man died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried, and in Hades, being in torment, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus at his side. And he called out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus to dip the end of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in anguish in this flame." But Abraham said, "Child, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, Lazarus in like manner bad things. Now he is comforted and you are in anguish." So there's a couple of things that these two parables have in common. Both of them deal with someone who had been blessed with a lot, who is comfortable, and this guy was even more than comfortable. It says he feasted sumptuously every day. Most people, to feast sumptuously was something you would do on a special occasion. But he could feast sumptuously every day. He would really been blessed. So every day he's having a feast. And now he finds himself in torment. And what was his crime? What was his evil that he did? It actually doesn't say, it doesn't spell out what he did that was so terrible. But it does say this important thing, that at the end of his gate was a man who was in such pain and anguish that all he wanted was some crumbs and the dogs licked his sores. So what was the evil of the man who was feasting sumptuously every day? I think it was that he was oblivious to the poor man at the gate. I don't think he hurt that guy or did anything mean to him or caused him any harm or put him in that circumstance, but he simply had no compassion or concern or care or even awareness. And so now he's having to answer for that. And it reminds me of in Matthew 25 when Jesus says, "I was sick, I was hungry, I was naked, I was thirsty, and you didn't do anything." And they all said, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or sick or in prison? When did we overlook that?" And he says, "Much as you didn't do it to the least of these, you didn't do it to me." They apparently lived a life that was kind of oblivious. And I will admit to being guilty of that as well. Of sort of living in my own comfortable little bubble and having plenty and more than enough and really being spoiled, being blessed with plenty of things to enjoy and having lots of fun. And I wasn't mean. I don't think I was cruel to anybody. I wasn't hurting anybody else. I wasn't being evil. I wasn't taking from other people. But I would say that I was living comfortably, just kind of oblivious to the world around me. And I tend to kind of be that way, I think. I think I'm sort of like in my own little bubble. And so Sarah's constantly helping me to be aware all the time. That's one thing she's good at, helping me. Because I just sort of get like in the zone and I'm not really aware of what's going on around me. That's not a good thing. Because here's the rich man who's feasting. He's got his friends there. They're having a big time. And they're not apparently unaware that down at the end of the road at the gate was a guy who was really suffering. And all he wanted was a crumb. And that's not a good thing to be oblivious like that. We need to be aware. We need to take note of opportunities to help other people. I want to brag on Jack for a second because he's not here. And he'd probably be embarrassed and not want me to tell the story. But when he was over in Ghana recently, they were nearly done with their trip, and when they about ready to come home, he had money left over. In fact, quite a bit of money. We had given some money to help with some expenses, and he had taken some money because he's been working. And so he had, I think, around $500 left over and was, you know, ready to come back. He had shopped and all that. And there was a kid at the, you know, they help these hungry kids and all that at the place they are. But one of them had, years ago, they had helped this child get a prosthetic leg. And it's a difficult prosthesis to get because it has to come all the way up to the upper part of the thigh. So it's not just the one that goes under below your knee, but it has a joint in it, I guess, and it comes up here. So it's kind of a... And this kid, when they got it for him, was small, but now he's grown. And so his prosthetic leg that he's got is like several inches too short. So when he stands up, it's sort of just swinging in the air. I mean, it doesn't even touch the ground. And so it's expensive. But anyway, Jack used that money he had to get him a prosthetic, one that would fit, which is cool. And I'm just saying, I don't know if I was, when I was that age, I don't know that I would have thought of that. I hope I would have, but I don't know. Maybe I would have been thinking about, hey, what can I buy if I've got $500 left over? When I get home, what could I afford, you know? And be kind, it would be like me to be oblivious to this need. And I think that's something that I think we can learn from these parables. Now, both of these guys have the aha moment. But here's the tragic thing. The rich man has his aha moment and it's too late. And so he says, send somebody back and tell my brothers. You know, but he's like, he's suddenly recognizing it, but it's too late. The good thing about the dishonest manager is he has his aha moment, but he has time to react and adjust. I can't go back and talk to myself in 1997. That's just a hypothetical thing. You know, could you? What would you say if you could? But we can't. But I can talk to me now, and you can. I can talk to you now. The word is speaking to us now. We can't really change what we did in the past. I can't go back and invest in Amazon or Facebook or Google or Apple or any of those things that would have paid off. I can't go back and change any of that. But what I can do is change me now and try to be more aware of how I can use what I've been entrusted with as a steward to glorify God, to help others, to be generous, to be ready to share, so that we are investing not in something that might pay off in 20 or 30 years, but in something that will pay off for eternity, laying up treasures in heaven by using what God has blessed me with to be a benefit and a blessing to others, realizing that none of it's really mine anyway, and you can't keep it anyway. It's all temporary. It's all going away, so use it to do good while you can, and that's really the message. Perhaps there's someone here this evening who needs to make something right in your life. If there's some way that we can help you with that, if that's by being baptized to have your sins washed away, or if it's by confessing sin or just asking for the prayers of the church, we certainly would like to offer you that opportunity. And if we can help, please let us know as we stand and sing.